The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Okay, hello everybody. Thanks for coming to the panel on the 2008 election. I'm Rishi Reddy. I'm with SALT. We are going to be talking about how the 2008 election showcased the largest and most visible levels of political participation by new Americans and by communities of color, and South Asians were definitely part of this larger movement. So we'll take an opportunity now with this panel to understand the trends of the South Asian vote, and also to be figuring out ways in which we might leverage this increased participation in this following non-national election year, and to sort of think about how we might be able to do that in all aspects of society. So I wanted to point out that on your CDs, which were included in your packets when you came in, that we have all the 2006 Exit Polling Project, SALT's report on the 04 and 06 elections, Asian Americans at the ballot box, the 2006 Orange County election, and another report on new experiments in minority voter mobilization. So let me start off by introducing everybody here. To my right is Taz Ahmed. Taz is the Orange County Asian Pacific Islander Community Alliance. She's been organizing youth voters for 11 years and is a founder of South Asian American Voting Youth, also known as SAVI. And we have Ann Khalil, who's the co-director of the South Asian American Policy and Research Institute based in Chicago, and she's also affiliated with the Indo-American Democratic Organization in Chicago. And then we have Glenn McIntyre. Glenn is a staff attorney with the Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund, also known as ALDEF, and he coordinates their voting rights program. Glenn oversees all DAF's efforts in 15 states across the Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, and Midwest. So we thought we'd start out today, what else do I need to say here? There was a few things that I was told to remind everybody about their cell phones, so I'll do that. And also that SALT, as well as many of the coalition organizations who are here, are nonprofits who have a nonpartisan mandate, and so just to remember that in our comments as we go forward. And supposedly there was going to be a photographer at this session, so if folks would prefer not to be photographed, just sort of adjust yourself as she makes her way around here. Okay, so Glenn, I wanted to start out with you and ALDEF's report from the 2008 election, if you could tell us a little bit more about the polling data project that you all undertook there.
Thanks so much. I'm going to stand just so that I can not block the presentation. So as you don't know, ALDEF is a national organization founded in 1974 to protect and promote the legal rights of Asian Americans through litigation, legal advocacy, and community education. We have a number of programs here, and Chinmay Ong, my colleague, who does our education equity and youth program, is also here. In the last elections, we conducted a multilingual exit poll and poll monitoring in about 11 different states and Washington, D.C. We're happy to work with corporate law firms like Candle Gates, Sherman and Sterling, Wagachel, and a number of firms across the United States, and also Asian American Law Students Association, SALSAS, SALT, and a number of national and local organizations. And so we're very proud to do that work. We monitored poll sites for compliance with the Federal Voting Rights Act, the Help America Vote Act, and also we did the nation's largest multilingual exit poll of Asian American voters. And what we're really excited about is that we polled over 60,000 Asian American voters in 11 states and 39 jurisdictions. We were able to disaggregate the data just because it was so large. And usually what happens is that mainstream voter news services and election pools typically overlook the Asian American vote. That they're too small of a percentage to reliably report out. Or they'll break it out by different groups. Whites, African Americans, Latinos, and other. And Asian Americans are excluded. We were really proud to do this study because we're not only able to look at Asian American voting patterns, but for the first time we're also, well, not for us, we're easily able to disaggregate the data by different South Asian ethnic groups. So Indians, Bangladeshis, Pakistanis, and diasporic Indians, but specifically Indo-Caribbeans. We're still, we don't have good enough sound to speak of Indians from England and from London or from Canada. So that's still something that we're working on. But at least Guyanese, Trinidad, and Jamaica, where South Asians exist, we've been able to do that. These are the jurisdictions in which we've been able to pull. Largely, as obvious, in the South Asian community, South Asians are the second largest group that we pulled. We pulled 5,000, mostly Indian, but also Bangladeshi, Indian Caribbean, Pakistani, other South Asians, Sri Lankans, and other groups. Age populations, only 13% of Asian Americans were born in the United States. 20% had no formal U.S. education. Now, for all the talks of Asian Americans and South Asians being a highly educated class, and that's true, a number of us have a college or have a college degree or graduate education. A number of us have no formal U.S. education. And typically in American schools, we learn about civic engagement and the American political process. And so some of those issues, where the Asian Americans and South Asians are coming to the focus, and they didn't get the lesson in the president, the governor, a mayor, state legislature, Congress, can you elect the court? Well, not the Supreme Court, but you can elect a state court. Those dynamics, and sometimes our community needs a little bit more assistance to try to exercise the right to vote. We found that large numbers of Asian Americans were limited English proficient. Now, Chinese and Koreans have to be the most limited English proficient. Here's the number for South Asians overall. And most South Asians tend to be highly English proficient, Gujarati, Punjabi, Urdu. However, if you look in particular jurisdictions, like Gujarati speakers in Edison, New Jersey, like Bengali speakers in Hamtramck, Michigan, the numbers obviously move over a little bit more, and they actually go much further over to the right. And so in particular areas, we find that South Asian American voters need access to exercise their right to vote. First-time voters, ethnicity. South Asians led the country and led the Asian American community in voting for the first time in these elections. Incredible excitement. And it is the work of my co-panelists and Saul to do the way your work to do voter education and voter registration to really make sure that these numbers were among the highest of all Asian ethnic groups in the United States. Okay, so this is my typo. This slide is reversed. That's very good. I'm like, oh. So just replace Asian and the South Asian. That is, so that's the problem when you release said that for the first time. 76% of South Asians were enrolled in the Democratic Party. Amongst Asian Americans, so it's 58%. Asian Americans, only 58%. Chinese and Koreans have higher, and Filipinos have higher rates of no party enrollment, or Republican enrollment, particularly Vietnamese. Of all Asian ethnic groups, South Asians are the most democratic population.
Yay! Maybe you can include a little bit in your presentation about how you did that.
So as the nation voted for the first African American member of president of the United States, Asian Americans also voted for the first African American. South Asian Americans, again, led the Asian American vote. They voted for Mr. Obama. Filipinos and Vietnamese tend to be a little bit more Republican. Vietnamese are actually quite Republican. And they voted in very large numbers for McCain. We had particularly high Vietnamese voting patterns in Texas. I mean, Washington, Texas, right? Louisiana, actually in the Virginia area. But South Asians in all the jurisdictions, New York, Michigan, New Jersey, Virginia, Maryland, even in Boston, in Massachusetts, led the way for Mr. Obama. Crossover voting for all Asian Americans, 93% of all Asian American Democrats voted for Mr. Obama, 98% of South Asian Americans voted for Mr. Obama. And 35% of South Asian Republicans voted for Mr. Obama. So what you saw is that cross-party appeal, Republicans crossing party lines voting for the Democratic candidate was much stronger amongst the South Asian community. For the different states, this is how the vote breaks down for different populations. And we wanted to identify the South Asian vote in the states with the largest Asian American populations. And so Michigan, New York, Maryland, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Virginia. 90% of Asian Americans, South Asians, voted for Mr. Obama. The only other demographic group that had these kinds of numbers, especially for Mr. Obama, are African Americans. As well as in that commentary to the panelists afterwards. What the most important factors that South Asian Americans said why they wanted to vote for Mr. Obama? Economy, jobs. And this graph turns out, and this actually is correct, South Asian versus Asian American. So what's interesting about Asian Americans and South Asians is that although culturally we come from many different countries, right? Our ACs is Asians and South Asians really the same, right? Our dances, our cultures, our language, our foods are incredibly different. However, in the political arena, when it comes to issues, East Asians and South Asians and Southeast Asians and other Pacific Islanders, both Filipinos, tend to work in lockstep. That in the voting booth and in the political arena, our communities exhibit political cohesion at tremendous rates, only by a couple of percentages. They voted for Mr. Obama, they voted for the Democratic candidate for Congress, which we also have some data, and also on the same issues. There might be some local differences by local candidates, particularly when you have like a Korean versus a Bangladeshi running for the same position. But on the national or in a larger level, especially in Congress, Senate, state officials, gubernatorial, Asian American, and we've been holding for a number of years, both the same one. Again, most important factors when you look at it for South Asians by vote for Obama versus vote for McCain. And these are all, a lot of these are also reproduced for you here in this little breakout on the South Asian American votes. We did want to poll a couple of political opinions. South Asian American voters said that many of them were concerned about health care reform and that undocumented, that everyone should have universal access to health care regardless of their immigration status. South Asian Americans, and actually all Asian Americans, including Southeast Asians, particularly Republicans, said that they were in favor of this proposition. The South Asian American vote, highest numbers for Mr. Obama amongst the young people, but all Asian ethnic groups. What was a little bit more interesting here in this slide, this is for Asian American population, and you see a more significant drop-off in the age for Mr. Obama for 18 to 29-year-olds than you have for those over 70. You do not have that for South Asians. All Asian, South Asian ethnic groups, and all age cohorts voted for Mr. Obama at over 90%. For all Asian Americans, the number drops off. And so what we did see is a little bit more citizenship tenure and age getting a little bit more conservative. And we see this playing out by different groups, particularly when it comes to English proficiency, not for South Asians, but for all Asians, not as strong support for Mr. Obama. And again, when we look at the numbers by nativity, are you born in the United States versus foreign born? Again, South Asians continue to be consistent. Asian Americans saw a little bit more of a drop off. And some of this stuff is we're trying to look at why is this. They still voted for Obama. at very high rates, but not as high as English proficient, U.S.-born citizens, American-born citizens of the United States. And I think that there's some issues that the administration may need to be looking at, particularly with groups. Large numbers of first-time voters, obviously voted for Mr. Obama, I guess that is another way. And then a number of poll sites had voting problems in our poll monitoring that some of our volunteer attorneys found. We'd like to report out on that at the end of this presentation. We couldn't do this work with the help of co-sponsored organizations across the United States, including South Asian American leaders from
leading together.
Well, we're like 7 years working with this group. So we're very happy to be working with SALT and a number of groups across the United States. Anybody from Michigan?
My family services.
Oh, okay. We don't want to
do. No.
We're actually presenting this data in a number of jurisdictions. For our APA Heritage Month, we'll be in Michigan, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, Boston. We'll be in a number of conferences presenting specific breakouts. And part of it is we want to use this data as an opportunity to expand the Asian American voice in the political arena.
Thank you, and that was the first time that this data has become public after the 2008 election, and you saw it here for the first time. So I missed. Did you have something to say?
Are you seeing questions, Dan, or can we ask a quick
question? Ask a quick question. We can sort of incorporate it into the other panelists' responses.
Just one really quick observation. In 2004, when you did this, I don't think you did Louisiana, Texas, and Nevada.
That's correct.
But in this time, when I was looking through your yellow brochure and your presentation, again, I saw data from all the states, but I didn't see data points from Texas, Louisiana, or Nevada. And I'm wondering, are these statistical outliers the other way?
Most of the work that we do is on the East Coast, the Midwest. And we just started doing work in the South Central region of the United States, so that is a new development. In 2002, we just did this in four states: New York, New Jersey, Michigan, and Massachusetts. 2004, we picked out 8 states. 2006, 11, and then 2008. Again, 11 states, but we improve the methodology. And then our colleagues in California actually do LA and some of that data, so they'll be talking about that.
Any other questions about the presentation? So, well, let me ask our other panelists, what sort of responses you have to these numbers and what in your own experience has either paralleled what Glenn has presented or been different, and Ted, what is your perspective from the West Coast on that?
Well, we do poll monitoring and exit polling, too, on Election Day. And I was looking at your data, and I think a lot of the data that we collected reflects what you were saying. We were not able to focus our exit polling on the South Asian community, Orange County. I don't know how many of you guys know about Orange County. It's kind of really suburban. The community really doesn't live together unless...
No.
do exit polling, but we were able to poll too many of the South Asian teams. Oh, yay!
So, Tez, you're saying that your methodology Tez, you're saying that your methodology was different from Glenn's group and that you weren't able to isolate people in the South Asian community by ethnicity the way that Glenn was able to.
Because people don't live together in Orange County.
Not in County.
Exactly.
Because why?
I'm sorry.
What was that?
Because why?
They don't tend to live together, so it was harder to do targeted precincts exit polling.
Okay.
Because they don't all live in the same neighborhood.
Okay.
So, if I can talk a little bit about the work that we did at Okapika, we did phone banking in our community. So, I work at Okapika, the Orange County Asian Pacific Islander Community Alliance, and we ran Project API Vote, where we also conducted an experiment, but our experiment was more conducted around the campaigning process. So we sent out Easy Voter Guides, which are these little nonpartisan voter education materials, to voters. And we focused on low propensity voters in three different counties, Orange County, Riverside, and San Bernardino. But we focused the experiment that we conducted on voters in Orange County, and we focused on low propensity voters. And by low propensity, we looked at people who didn't vote, or who voted one, two, or three times in the past five elections. So we were able to collect data from the registrar of voters, looking at the voter files. And the voter file is basically people who are registered to vote. So we took that list, we did a last name analysis, and we were able to pull out who these low propensity voters by ethnicity, Chinese, Korean, Vietnamese, Filipino, South Asian, and Pacific Islander. So we had six target groups. So we sent a small portion of them Easy Voter Guides, and then we also did phone calls to these voters. We tried to do bilingual phone calls, which we were able to do. We enforced bilingual phone calls for the Chinese, Korean, Vietnamese community. And as you guys know, South Asian, it's a lot harder to do bilingual phone calls because there's just so many different languages. So we got volunteers who were South Asian, so they were able to, when they called people, they were able to say uncle, auntie, they were culturally appropriate. it worked, you know? In California, we had three different elections. We had the March primaries, the June elections, and the November election. So the data we were able to collect was from the June election. We're still waiting on our data from the November election from our researchers, but basically, for the phone bank, we called about 6,500 people for the June election, 9,022 for the November election. For the DC community, we called 500 for June and 900 for November. Our results are back from the June election, and it shows that calling people bilingually has a 10.1 percentage point effectiveness. This is comparable to high-quality door-to-door canvassing, and it's the most effective phone bank of all the research that's been put out there. And I think, I've been doing voting work for the past 11 years now, and this is the first time I actually have proof to be able to say, if you call the community in your language, it's going to work. And I think this is something that we know, right? As community organizers, we know this, but it took working with the James Irvine Foundation, which funds our program, working with researchers, it took took getting that research component to now be able to have proof and paperwork to say, you got to fund us, you got to fund us to do phone banking, it's effective. So I'm actually really excited about that work.
And were there anything in the all the survey tests that came as a surprise to you? For instance, that South Asians were second only to African Americans in the percentage points that they were voting
for
President Obama, right? Or that there's political cohesion among the South Asian?
It doesn't surprise me. The data from the 04 elections and the data from the 06 election reflects the same for LA and Orange County as well. I think doing community organizing and doing voter work in the South Asian community, this is something I always kind of knew. I feel like people always told me the other aspect of it, but I felt like as an organizer, I knew this. It just takes doing campaign work that's intertwined with research work to actually have that proof. So now I can say stuff and I have proof to say how we vote.
And how about you? Is anything in the ALDEF survey come as a surprise to you or strike you from your work in Chicago?
No, not really. But the one thing, though, that, well, originally when I saw the lower percentage, I was like, a lower percentage of South Asians identified with being, you know, Democratic, that to me was sort of a shock. And we recently had Karthik Ramakrishnan come over to Chicago. And he actually did, they just did the survey.
Could you just tell folks just why you say his name?
Yes, thank you.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. And this is the national, so they just did this, it's www.nassurvey.com, and they just did this survey of over 5,000 Asian Americans in different states from between, phone calls from August 2008 to through October 2008, where they actually, you know, polled people. Now, in comparison to that and this, one of the things that was surprising to me was the fact that of the party identification here, I think, Glenn, in your report, it shows that there's a very high percentage of South Asians who say that they are with the Democratic Party. Whereas in my experience in Illinois, as well as in, you know, with other areas, you know, people tend, South Asians tend to be shy to, especially in primary elections or during the caucuses, you know, to go and actually say that they are with this party. They like to view themselves as being independent. So that to me was an interesting factor of people being. It would be more interesting, you know, to look at the details, because a lot of this, both this survey, you know, as well as the exit polling, really covers the presidential elections. And so, you know, perhaps there would be more interesting information if we started looking at how do people vote in sort of the local elections. You know, whether or not that they, you know, let's just go from presidential to federal, right, congressional and Senate, and then even more in the local elections, and maybe they just flip their tickets. That would be very interesting to see how people do that, and I don't know if that's something that you were able to get at all in the exit poll. Yes.
We are, but only in very isolated jurisdictions, so like Boston, Massachusetts, and New York, and in Edison, New Jersey. Northern New Jersey. We have to do the Edison, we've done Bergen County. So very small elections we have, but very little.
And the other thing is also when you start looking at, for example, if you start looking at places like Illinois tends to be as a state, you know, generally it's a blue state. And so therefore it's not surprising that you're going to find that, you know, there's a high propensity of people who vote Democratic. Everybody wants to go for the winner, right? So, you know, so you'll find, you know, I think if you start analyzing a little bit more into these areas, you'll find that there are going to be some other factors, which is why, you know, people vote, you know, one way or the other. I can say that, you know, party affiliation is important. And I can tell you, just give you an example. How many of you have heard of Tammy Duckworth? She ran and picked a couple of people. She was actually reached out to in Illinois in this DuPage County area. She was reached out to by the party to run for Congress. And it's predominantly a Republican area. And Tammy Duckworth is an Iraq War veteran and who actually lost both her legs in the war. And she's just an amazing woman. She's just recently been confirmed as Assistant Secretary of VA, Veterans Affairs. So she was running in this congressional race, which is predominantly Republican. And what happened was that the Democratic National Committee sent a couple of people to Illinois just to get the Asian American community organized so they can actually win this election. And what happened was is that as they were strategizing, the campaign sort of shifted, you know, their strategy in midstream and said, you know, we're not going to worry about any other Asian American groups except for the South Asians. Because what if their sort of polls were showing that South Asians tended to vote, you know, more Democratic than single, you know, women. and, you know, other groups. And so they shifted their strategy and just sort of started, honing in on the South Asian population. And it was a very good, unfortunately, she ended up losing. But when we were doing, just as Taz was saying, when we started doing phone calls in the different languages, and we were able to get people immediately to connect to you, whether it was somebody who was in the or in the group, immediately connect to you, they would say, yes, we heard of her. No, we're going to vote for her. And she lost by a couple of percentage. But I think, here's an example where, even those who are managing these races or parties actually are starting to pay attention to the fact that as a population, South Asians tend to not only identify with the political party, but they actually tend to vote. So that's just an example of the fact that, so you have this data and, what are you going to do about it? That's great, for perhaps for one party, for the Democrats, that South Asians tend to vote Democratic. And I think so that's something that I wanted to do. Now, Glenn, one of the things I was very surprised with your Illinois stats on Obama. And of the states that you were showing that that voted for Obama, only 64% of the South Asians tended to vote for Obama, which to me was very surprising. So I don't know if you have any details on that or that is on page 11. And yes, Michigan is number one, which is very from the work that we did, that's not surprising. But if you look at page 11, it says that vote by president by state is 100%. Now, I'm just wondering whether or not is that for all Asian Americans?
All Asian Americans.
All Asian Americans.
So a little bit more in Illinois, we're a little bit more heavy on Korea. And Koreans have lived, especially outside of the East, the Northeast, are a little bit more bifurcated. So, and especially in California, about a third of Koreans are Democrats, about a third are Republicans, and a third are independents. So their strength is not as democratic as other major ethnic groups. So I think that's true in Illinois. So that's why it's skewed a little bit.
So I would suggest that if there can be a little breakdown of the ethnic groups, because, for example, when I look at the Dominican Republic's Korean American community, that's understandable. Coming from Illinois, we do know that the Korean American community is much more conservative.
It seems like it is on this page.
Is it on?
It says 96% voted for Obama in Illinois in the South Asian.
And I think they don't have that.
Yeah, we don't have on the second page. There were 9 out of 10. It looks like it is
designed.
Well, let me ask you this, Anne. Given that there's such an identification with South Asians with the Democratic Party, what are some techniques you're seeing, or how do you feel that South Asians can hold these elected officials accountable now for some of those issues?
Well, I think it's extremely important that we work within an organizational framework. I have to say this, there are groups during the elections, and Dave is actually walking here, not to sort of point you out.
No, that's fine.
Dave Kumar, along with Rajiv Arkadian, and Nick Rathbone, and she was here from South Pole, and she actually worked on the campaign as well. But South Pole actually did an incredible amount of work for South Asians for Obama, which is now South Asians for Opportunity, right?
not officially.
Not officially, okay. I mean, incredible amount of work in terms of, creating these 17 chapters, $200,000 raised from over 17 individuals. I mean, there was some new voters, over 3,000 new voters were brought into the poll, and over 100,000 voters, or 10,000 voters were reached out. So much was done. And I think, so what happens next? You got these people engaged in the process, and what happens next? And, personally, I feel that, in order for the momentum to continue on and to actually hold our accountable, whether it's at the local level as well as at the sort of national level, is that people need to get involved in an organizational framework. That's the only way. The numbers count, right? Whether it's money or whether it's votes, numbers count. So I think you've heard yesterday when you had people here, like Min Chen and Nick from the administration, and they talked about wanting to reach, you know, reach out to people and hear what they say. Well, you know, take that opportunity and do so. You know, organizations like SALT and Convene, you know, the conversations. But the conversations need to come not only from Washington, D.C. It needs to come from all of us who are in the different parts of the country. And there needs to be an agenda. I think so often what happens is that we do not speak with a unified voice. We all have sort of different perspectives and different ideas, and that's fine. That's fine, but we need to reach out. And I think, you know, that is something that, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, there's people like yourselves who are here who will go back and do so. You know, there is nothing wrong with walking into your elected office, you know, official's office and asking for a meeting. If you don't meet with the elected official, you should meet with the, you know, with their staff and tell them that you want, you know, you want this issue identified. And that's important. And so, it's important that we do that as in an organizational framework, and I say that. I say that so much because how many of you have heard all of the campaign finance scandals going on in Illinois? So this is what happens when, you know, I mean, I'm proud of being Illinois, but sometimes I'm not proud of the fact that our political culture is such that we have no campaign finance, or I should say we have no court finance laws. And there are no limitations to how much money you can give an official. So the political culture in Illinois is in itself. So, it's failed in such a way that it does encourage people like the South Asians that you've seen in the newspapers to give a lot of money. And, you know, coming from South Asia, we tend to feel that that's the norm. I'm not excusing the people who did, you know, what they did.
It's a haunted
house. It's a very, I can't turn that off.
I think it was just highlighting your comment.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to say that, coming from a culture that says, you know, pay to play is something that works, is the norm. And then when we come here to the United States and you have the same sort of behavior encouraged, you think that's just the norm.
But Obama going to change it?
I'm sorry?
Isn't Obama going to change that?
Well, I mean, a lot of the campaign finance laws are locally, you know, sort of guided. So states need to have, you know, these campaign contribution limitations. And if they don't, then this is what happens. And so so people think that the only way you have access to elected officials is if you write big checks. And if you write big checks and they're individuals, and what happens when the individual goes is that you lose the access. And the community really, I mean, there's an argument of whether or not the community has access, but, you know, whatever limited access they have is gone. So that's why it's really important to work on those.
So I heard a call to action in there and about, for all of us, once we have issues that we've identified that are important to us to go make those appointments with our elected officials. I heard that thrown out there. I'm wondering, Taz, in your experience, what are some techniques to hold politicians politically accountable? If you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, definitely. I think, the whole reason why I got started in doing this work, especially for the South Asian community, when I first started Savvy, was there's this idea that the only thing that politicians pay attention to is the power behind money and the power behind vote. And I knew I had no money, but I knew I could organize voters, and so that's what I did. And I think that's really the premise behind how I mobilize and how I participate in community organizing. I'm a Wellstone trainer. I train with them, so we go out and do stuff. But they have this philosophy, that they have this Wellstone triangle, and it's this idea of to do really good community organizing, you have to have electoral organizing, you have to have grassroots organizing, and you have to have public policy. And to be effective, you need all three points. So we can't just go out and do voting without connecting it to public policy and connecting it to the people, community organizing. We can't just do community organizing and work on issues without connecting it to voting and public policy. We can't work on public policy without being connected to the community and without having it connected to voting, right? So this is this is really how I like to see my work, and this is what we train people on how to do community organizing. So I think as we go into, you know, a non-election year, we just had a really incredible 2008, we really need to start, now that we have the electoral organizing part down, we got to start doing community organizing, we got to start doing public policy. We have to go back to the community, we have to organize, keep them connected with issues, educate, do all the fun stuff that we don't have time to do during an election year. We got to do public policy. We have to write reports on issues that are important to us. And not only do we have to write reports on policy platforms, we have to make sure it gets to the right people. And we need to develop leaders, and this is obviously the Wellstone thing to do, is to develop the leaders of tomorrow. I think we have so much potential to have South Asian electives in office. We have so much potential to have South Asian leaders in the community, but we need to develop them and give them the core skills to organize properly and ethically, as we see in Chicago. And I think, I think I'll leave it there.
So you're talking about the triumvirate here of the community organizing, the voting, and the public policy. And just to back up for a moment, what were some ways, Taz, that South Asians were involved in the 2008 campaign? And were there techniques that were unique to the South Asian community, sort of with the uncle auntie approach that you're talking about on the phones? Or were there other things that you saw playing out that were unique to the community that weren't in the greater Obama campaign or the Democratic campaign or the Republican campaign?
Can I talk about what I did at OCAPICA in particular? Please?
No.
What you guys have in front of you are these stickers that say, I'm South Asian and I vote. So that's the tactic that we use on our campaign. We created these stickers not just for South Asians, but we created it for I'm Chinese and I vote, I'm Korean and I vote, I'm Vietnamese and I vote, I'm Pacific Islander, I'm Asian. And I think that's it. I think those were our and I'm Filipino. So, and as you'll see on the bottom, we have our voter hotline number, so people could call if they had an issue that was going on, which would just be aligned to me. And we have enough multilingual speakers in our office that we could get in language folks. We have these buttons that we use, which are in Hindi, and they say vote. We had some vote language in our six different target ethnicities. These are the t-shirts that we created and the languages on it too, right? So we had it in, I'll just load it as Samoan, Vietnamese, Hindi, Korean, Tagalog, and Chinese. We had all of our volunteers write us on election day so that if we approached anyone for exit polling or poll monitoring, people could see the languages on there. We just did so much stuff. We created posters for election day, and these were ones that we created for the November elections, and just said, sign up to vote, get educated, and go vote with the date. So we would plaster the community with these. For the June election, we did it in English and Vietnamese. For the November election, we did it in Chinese, Korean, and Vietnamese, and English. We had these, we had a photo campaign where we had these whiteboards, and we'd go, whenever we did community outreach, we had people with, you know, a marker write down why they're going to vote, and then took a picture of them, you know, holding the sign. So then we have this whole, like, photo documentation of people and why they're going to vote, and this really engages people in conversation, which was really what we were trying to do, because we were not doing voter registration. Our funding came strictly from voter education and voter mobilization, which for me made it a lot more fun because it kind of like took out the voter reg part to it, and we really had to be creative. Okay, how do you educate these communities? How do you engage people in a dialogue? Another thing that we did was we gave out mini grants to young people. This is the carryover from my savvy work. We gave out $1,000 grants. We told people, young kids, to come up with whatever they wanted to come up with. We have a Vietnamese mentoring group down in Orange County, and they did a t-shirt campaign. And these are all high school kids. So it says, bears can't vote, you should. So they made these t-shirts with their grant, and they gave it out to their friends and families. They actually actually had a rally on the day right before, the weekend right before elections in Little Saigon in Orange County. Everyone was wearing shirts. They had bands out. They were giving out educational materials. Another Vietnamese group locally, they decided to create these tote bags. I don't know if you know the song, but they took, it's called You Can Vote However You Like. So they played on that one song that was really popular around November. I forgot how the song goes. Hopefully you know the hip-hop song I'm referring to. We did... What? I don't remember
this one.
We had a campaign at UCI. We did a graffiti wall. We had a campaign at... UCI is UC Irvine. We had a campaign at Cal State Fullerton. They did these shirts. It says, hello, I'm Asian. And I vote. People just filled in with their name. Giving themselves ownership over their campaign. You know, I think it's not South Asian specific, but it is peer-to-peer specific, yes. And it is Asian specific. So because the young people, for young people, we just kind of pushed them out there and we said, come up with an idea, we'll support you on it. What we did for the community partners was we just created a lot of supplies. We created the t-shirts, the buttons, the stickers, and we gave it to them. And because our community partners, they're working on so... They have such little resources and they're doing so much stuff. I didn't want to inundate our community partners with having to create more stuff. So we just created a community voter kit, gave it to them, and asked them to go out to the community. So we had 13 community partners that went up into the Chinese, Vietnamese, Korean, Muslim communities. We partnered with CARE. So it was just a really amazing experience. And I think my advice is just that there's no one way to do it. Each community does it differently. But you need to work with the community to come up with ideas that they're interested in.
Mm-hmm. And did you have anything to add to that?
From the experience, I think, you know, what's happening now is, I mean, yes, after the presidential election's over, but there's still a lot of different types of local elections that are happening in the States every 2 years. And you know, more recently, there are still a lot of local elections happening. And I think what we need to do is pay attention to those. And so to sustain that interest, you know, what can we do? We're going to start seeing more and more South Asians who want to run for office. And not every South Asian who runs for office is necessarily aware of some of the community issues. So it's going to be our responsibility to make sure that, whether they're aware of it or not, that they should become aware of our issues. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, sometimes people just vote because they say, well, that person's a South Asian and I'm going to vote for them. And there's always a dilemma. You just vote for anybody just because they're South Asian. Where do they stand on issues of concern with the community? And I think that's...
Yeah, no, Bobby Jindal.
I'm sorry?
Bobby Jindal.
Or Bobby Jindal and, you know, takes all different kinds to make a community, right?
What I mean is would the democratic commitment that South Asians seem to demonstrate, would that shift if Bobby Jindal ran for office?
I guess what I can say is that, you know, is that when you know that there is something running for office, this from the community, I think it's important that you, you know, take interest, meet with the person, tell them that these are the issues of our community as your organization, as your groups, you know, where do they stand on these issues, and ask them for a commitment and make sure that they are interested in immigration reform, and, you know, they are interested in, you know, campaign finance, implementation, and things of that sort. And then decide whether or not you want to support that person. A lot of the political education that we can do in our community is very, you know, the one challenge that's really important is the ethnic media. We tend to use the ethnic media when there's an election, you know, whether it's to, you know, I could say that, you know, groups are supporting candidates or whatnot. I think it's important that if we can have a regular column in the different ethnic, you know, newspapers or especially in the print media, where you can actually write about, you know, why is it important to know what you need to say. Why is it important that you go and meet the elected officials? Or why is it important that you observe how they vote on certain issues? And I think organizations need to do that. I know in Chicago, where we are, what we tend to do is we have breakfast with our elected officials. What we will do is we'll take certain elected officials who are, let's say, in the health subcommittee. We have breakfast with them, and what we'll do is we'll bring people who are in the healthcare professions and ask them to talk about what are some of the issues, whether it's licensing issues, whether it's, shortage of nurses and things like that, and how is that going to be addressed. So those are some of the things that we can do to sort of continue this interest and to continue this activism. Voter registration, voter education, having sort of candidate forms, candidate guides, and engage your elected officials.
Thanks. Was there a question over here?
No, please.
Before we do that, let's turn it back to Glenn. Could we step back just one more moment to the survey? You talk about some of the obstacles to fair voting practices that you saw. I know that that will be of concern to the folks here, and I think it's an integral part of the survey that you all did. So if we can just add a little piece for you about that.
Just very briefly, as Asian Americans and South Asians not to vote, we also found that Asian Americans and South Asians face a number of voting barriers to exercise their right to vote. We work with a number of volunteer attorneys. I actually also forgot to mention SABANI, the South Asian American Bar Association of New York, the South Asian American Bar Association of New Jersey, of Washington, D.C., APABA, D.C. here, in helping us try to make sure that the South Asian Bar Association of Michigan, to try to make sure that South Asian Americans can exercise their right to vote. And we found instances of discrimination. At one poll site in Richmond Hill, which is in a Sikh neighborhood, poll workers told all the Sikh voters, we can't tell you apart, so you're all going to vote by affidavit, by provisional ballot. In Michigan, South Asian American voters came to vote. In actually one prior election, they were racially profiled and was required to provide naturalization certificates before they could vote. In another poll site, South Asian voters were described as terrorists. Poll workers said, I don't trust them. But there were also small instances, like in Edison, New Jersey, and Hamtramck, where South Asian voters just needed an interpreter, right? There were older grandparents. The formal form of discrimination, but when the jurisdiction knows that there are so many Desis in the community, but they don't provide the language assistance, whether it's required under the law, there should be poll workers who represent the electorate of the population, right? And most of the time, those poll workers are older, little ladies. And they're nice, they're okay. The problem is that America has changed tremendously since 1934. I work on enforcing the Voting Rights Act and work with attorneys on this, and we want to make sure that Asian Americans and South Asians can vote free of discrimination, bias, and harassment. And so we've been doing a series of complaint letters to the jurisdictions, and they've been writing back a little bit in response to us. But we continue to do this work, and we thank the law firms across the United States that help us do this. So you want to find out more, I actually have a copy of a report that talks about all the different voting barriers here.
I want to stab Chaz with my pen, and then I just want to open it out for questions. Yes, please go ahead.
Well, I'm neither white nor elderly, but I actually was a poll worker in my district, so I made sure I nodded to all the brown people coming in.
Where?
Howard County, Maryland.
Okay.
And I wanted to first applaud ALDEP and all the partners that got involved in really generating this, and in Orange County, and doing the work that you do. This is so essential to civic engagement. I wanted to know if this is going to be repeated every 4 years, or how often you're going to be keeping this up.
We're trying to do it every major federal election, so we will do 2010. If you would like to see it, then again, talk to your SALT board members and SALT. We do the South Asian community with the help of South Asian volunteers and SALT. So to the extent our methodology improves or goes down based on the volunteer base that we have. Right. I had to put Chinese people into a South Asian neighborhood just so that I couldn't staff it for a long enough time. And I'd rather do the work rather than leave them alive entirely. But you can imagine how it gets better. So we'll do that this fall. I think we're only going to cover New York and Boston because of the Asian Americans who are running in those races, in the local races, a mayor and public advocate in New York and Boston. But if there are other jurisdictions where there have been a history of voting barriers, We will stop them in full mind. We may not do the exit poll, but we will always put out, well, to the extent we can, volunteer attorneys to protect our community and ensure that they can vote free of discrimination. And so if there's something going up, let us know, and we'll try to do what we can. Like, I think Virginia's coming up in a couple of weeks, and we're looking to cover that. And we joined the board, school board from last week.
There's another question.
I just had a couple questions. I guess for Gwen. Is there a pattern by which immigrants, as you get from first generation to second generation and on down, and there's more, you know, quote unquote assimilation, is there a pattern of a shift from being solidly Democratic to more Republican and less Democratic? And my second related question to that is, how did the 2008 election compare to 2004 and 2000 in terms of Democratic vote? I mean, was it the Obama factor that brought out such strong Democratic majorities, or has that historically always been the case?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that I can't put up this slide anymore, but comparatively, since IRA, the Immigration Reform Act of 1996, we've seen a decade-long shift more towards the Democratic Party. And I think more Asians were more Republican pre-Clinton, but that has really changed tremendously. And again, South Asians have traditionally been leading the way. What is a little unique is that in looking at the vote versus Kerry versus Bush versus the vote Obama versus McCain, we actually saw acculturation in citizen tenure consistently be more Democratic with McCain, but there was a little bit of a drop-off with Obama. However, the intensity with the lower subgroups for Obama was much stronger. Okay, what does that all mean? If I had a slide, this is why it had to be PowerPoint, right? Because like, you can't talk numbers, you have to show numbers. And in Kerry, in the last presidential race, Asian Americans voted for the Democrats, they voted for Kerry, but not at the intensity for Obama. It was more like 60, 70, 80%. And I think South Asians were only at like 80%. In this election for Obama, the numbers were 60, 70, 80, 90%, so they're much stronger. However, you saw drop-off, minor with South Asians, negligible with South Asians, but evident with other Asian ethnic groups, with those who were limited English proficient, did not speak English, those who were foreign-born, and those who were senior citizens. You also saw the most intensive support for Obama amongst young people, American-born, so the most acculturated. You would expect that senior citizens, who are also the most acculturated, would be more Democratic, following others, just following like the U.S. borders. But that did happen in 90 with Kerry. Senior citizens moved more Democratic. In Obama, the drop-off, it went down a little bit. What does that mean? Just my own commentary? We do a lot of multimedia work in modern technology, right, to reach out to communities. Twitter, right? YouTube, Bookface. What do you think is like fax machines? They did, and they were tremendous, and there was a payoff. However, there are populations that are not engaged in those modern forms of media. And those are our grandparents. That's why I think the multilingual phone calling, very traditional forms of organizing and one-on-one, work really well. Okay, now we're here, and we are at this point. Now we do need to engage that population, because quite honestly, those are the most vulnerable of our community. Those are the ones who get locked out. And quite honestly, you tell the college-educated kids that I'm necessarily nervous about. I mean, they're great, but I think the people who need the support are those, where is Obama on the ballot? Because I can't find the O, right? It's not my language. What is the difference between the mayor and the Congress? And so those are the groups that they have real needs around healthcare, around social services, that I think we need to be talking about much, much more. So that's sort of it.
I wanted to feedback on what you were saying. I think Orange County is a largely Republican, it's a Republican county in a blue state. And what one of the interesting things that we noticed was that the general county turnout was low. It was, I think it was only 57%. It's highly vote by mail. Vote by mail usually means that more people turn out to vote. But I think in a, it was just really interesting to see in a Republican county that the turnout rate, people who actually went to vote, was lower. And I think it was because of the Obama effect. By the time it got to California, we were on the West Coast, so it was like 8 p.m. We already know how people were voting by the time it was. We already know who won by 5 p.m. So I think that kind of also has an effect on the
West. This election.
It was, well,
I think it was a little bit more restrained in the nights of the call.
Maybe. I mean, yes. The media.
I was there.
But maybe, I think the voters themselves.
Right.
I mean, just kind of was kind of, you know,
okay, I could do that or something.
Other questions?
I just, Glenn, in the report, you've shown how there was such similarity between Asian Americans as a total and South Asians as to.
So is that, that's traditionally, I know you haven't kind of divvied it out to this level before, but is that, so that wasn't shocking. I mean, we even considering.
No, I think that's consistent. I think East Asians and South Asians, and each East Asian, Chinese, Korean, Filipinos, and Bangladeshi, Pakistanis, Indians, really do vote similarly when it comes to top candidate, when it comes to issues.
Yeah.
When it comes to political opinion. I see that political solidarity. Y'all may not see that in the neighborhoods. Right? I mean, and you may not see that in the community-based organization, but like fighting, you know, there's all this shit going on. But, but politically, that solidarity, and maybe not the local race, but politically at the higher levels, that unanimity is, you know, unquestionable. Undeniable, unquestionable, and I'm crunching numbers in other different ways to see where the breakup is, and it's not statistically significant.
As a poll worker, you encourage to permanentize and to have a nationalization and voting registration? Because of, still lots of the South Asians are still permanentized and the, you know, naturalization is also a difficult process. So I think South Asians have need help in for naturalization. I'm facing problem for last 2 years to have citizenship. I plan applied for citizenship in 2007. Interest, my election is main interest. And the, but I did not get my citizenship up to the election.
No, definitely.
We should encourage, or we should try to help them.
Yeah.
Well, and this was one of the original mandates of the oldest political South Asian groups in the U.S., right, was to just get folks naturalized so that they'd be able to take part in the vote. And so what you're saying is that that issue is still around, which is, it's very, very true. And it's interesting that you're bringing that up because we're focused now, perhaps prematurely, even on jumping ahead to how to keep people engaged, but we are still at that level of how do we get people naturalized and know why it's important to be naturalized.
A couple of more questions. Just to follow up on that and the call out this morning from the drum group to, you know, advocate for naturalization or citizenship for undocumented people. And I wonder whether that's actually viable or whether the effort should be geared more towards getting services for undocumented aliens here. Because that might be a more accomplishable goal in terms of getting access to school, healthcare, and various services like domestic violence. And
so you're saying versus the legalization call that was given?
Because a blanket legalization, I don't, you know, it would be lovely, but I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
I mean, this is definitely like an immigration reform conversation. This comes up, this is where there's a lot of divide in the API immigration conversation. There's a lot of divide between, you know, pull out. Blanket legalization versus a more graduated form of legalization. I'm not going to touch that topic. I just know that it's a very controversial one in the community, and it's a controversial one within our organization as well.
Yeah, I mean, were you asking about immigrant voting in elections?
Well, then they can't vote if they don't have citizenship, so.
I mean, there's a couple couple of jurisdictions where non-citizens can vote in local elections, and there's been efforts to try to push for that.
Tacoma
Park, Maryland. New York has had ability for school boards, but then the school board were abolished. But there was a little bit of effort to try to encourage that. All that will defend legally that proposition a lot, but we're not going to campaign on it. We're not a grassroots organizer group, so it's not really our role to do that. But we are keeping tabs on it and providing the legal support of some of those efforts.
I'm not actually involved in any of it. This question just came to me while listening to that.
I just wanted to comment on what Ruth said. You know, that's interesting. Actually, both the national survey that was conducted, the issues identified by South Asians were, again, economy, healthcare, the war, and then hate crimes. Immigration was not one of the top categories, even though that seems to be a common theme in Ruth's case. And I think even in your study here, I think, you know, again, if you start looking at issues, I'm surprised to see that how, possibly surprised, the foreign policy, the war in Iraq is something that's
very quickly, if we can have a question.
I suggest hitting someone else. Mine was a long sort of open-ended comment question, so take someone else.
Okay, I just want to take a couple of more very quick questions and then see if we can get a call to action from our panelists, and we'll have to wrap up. So how so?
I just have a brief comment. But that survey was done by people who voted, correct? So that's kind of... The survey that your group did. So that's coming from what citizens feel is important for their issues. But then there's, you know, the immigration issue is more, obviously more important to people who don't have citizenship. So it's, I don't know if that really is really valid as far as you take the whole group, South Asian group or even Asian group.
Well, that's what she was saying, that the other survey, the telephone survey of immigrant and foreign citizen, even immigration does not rank in the top three of the most important issues.
Was that your point? What?
I didn't quite get Glenn's comment right now.
My survey?
Just now, what you said, like even among whom immigration does not rank.
Yeah, the national survey actually is just a survey of people. It doesn't really talk about, you know, what their immigration status is, which is different from Glenn's surveys of people who are sort of, you know, who are both.
Interesting.
I just had a comment first about Bobby Jindal before the elections. Actually, at Yale University, we're doing a panel, mostly South Asian students. I'm not a student at Yale. I never want to be. They said if Bobby Jindal ran for election, they'd rather vote for Bobby Jindal. So they were so starved of seeing somebody who was South Asian in political office, which was terrible. Because I was like, well, why would you want to vote for him? Second thing, which is more sociological than statistical, I noticed, especially Pakistani community I know pretty well in New York and New Jersey area, and they used to be mostly Republican, and in the last three elections it's been a slow shift. And still I realize that a lot of socially very conservative people, kind of socially conservative, but politically they were with Democratic Party, that there was a little shift. I don't know why they thought Obama was going to be socially conservative. Well, they were politically progressive, socially progressive people, but fiscally conservative people. Mm-hmm. They were moving. They were so rabidly Republican. They were part of this group called, you might have heard, they used to be called Pakistanis for a Republican Party. Now they're called Muslims for America. Socially progressive, as in they actually support gay marriage, one of the few groups in the Republican Party that actually does. So fascinating people. And when you go to their events, they would have wine and I think ham and cheese sandwiches there. Yeah. When you go to Republican Party, they break for namaz. And so I was like,
this is a Muslim group?
Yes.
Supporters of like.
Yeah. Wow. That was one of the few. Exactly. They call Muslims for America. There were two, Block Cabin Republicans and this group, actually.
The issue of that concerns me is that for our numbers, our Pakistani numbers are consistently going down. And, I mean, we specifically target
When you mean going down, what do you mean?
The numbers are, the rates of problem status are only 4%. And it's actually disconcerting to me because that's been a steady shift down. And I think we probably have the best methodology to pick up diverse South Asians. I mean, affirmatively. Like, we look for along, you know, all the names. So I think we really know how to do this. However, those numbers, it's an interesting statistic. It's an interesting dilemma because I'm not sure if people don't want to participate in the government survey, in a survey, or if there's something else going on where one immigration is ready for me. The population is too high. They've just been decimated that amount of luck. And so I don't know, but I think as a call to action, I would actually like to look at that stuff. I think that is a particular population where we need to sort of look at it, particularly when other things are happening, like healthcare survey, a census is coming, and some of the unique barriers that we found there. I think we need to start thinking about it internally, the community, and how to sort of deal with that.
Let's wrap up in this way. Let's take your question, Dave.
Okay. It was actually just a comment. One of the things in response to the Bobby Jindal comment, one of the things, I mean, I think we saw during the campaign is, I mean, one of the things about stereotypes or whatever it is, I think that over time they go away, right? So when supporting Obama, one of the things we found, particularly among older South Asians, was resistance to frankly voting for an African American initially. But over time, as people saw more and more of him, people became more comfortable with that. I think you see the same thing potentially, I would like to think, would happen even with someone like Bobby Jindal. I think the initial response to people, even who are might be liberal or Democrats, say, great, a South Asian. But as they actually get to know it, I think you saw the same thing at some level with women in Sarah Palin. I mean, when she first came on the scene, like, great, a woman. And then, you know, people got to know her, and then, like, okay, we don't really support her at all. And so I think we'll see that more and more. I think that's one thing that people, when we think about, you know, ethnic or candidates of a particular group, it's important to think about the initial response versus the, you know, over time. And particularly in national races, as you get to know candidates, I think that factor sort of goes away.
No, I think that's very true. It's sort of giving people credit for knowing about the issues that matter to them beyond identity.
But most South Asians will not really know about it, too, because they're not in Louisiana.
Exactly. I'm saying if you ran for you know, national office, there'd be an initial spike, right? I mean, I think people would support him big time initially, but over time, I think people would say, wait a minute, I don't actually agree with the guy, so I think the numbers will drop off.
Taft, did you have anything to add in terms of call for action? Because we've heard some from Glenn and we'll give you a last word.
Wow.
Count
ten.
We won.
We're not going to go there. I think my call to action is flip your definition for civic engagement. And as we look forward to this off-election year, we need to think outside of the box as far as how do we engage people and how do we do voting. I'm a blogger for CP Mutiny, and I see my action as a writer on that blog as a form of civic engagement. And I see, you know, people really don't think about whiteboard thinking as a form of civic engagement, but it really opens up dialogue and it engages the community. So we really need to think outside the box when it comes to how we want to mobilize and engage and get people interested in the voting process. And the other thing I wanted to add is, you know, I've been doing this work for so long, and this is the first time I was finally involved in a campaign where we have data and research and I can publish something. I think it's so important that we did so much work. We've been doing so much work, and it's proven. You know, young people are turning down larger numbers than ever. Basic kids think that South Asians have more political power than other ethnicities, which I just spoke at a campus a couple weeks ago, and the South Asian kid said that. I was like, wow, things have really changed over the past 11, 12 years. So I think, I mean, and that's great, but we need to document, we need to publish our research, we need to write down our findings. If you guys did campaigns on the grassroots level, write down your story, make sure it's documented, get it out there, get it on your local blog, or get it out on, we just have it documented, because it's important that we collect our history and how we do campaign work. That's it.
Okay, thank you all.